I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and this is Up to Date. We're just 2 weeks into the new year, and already Kansas City has four homicides on its violent crime sheet. Most recently, a triple homicide near 40th and the Paseo. The Kansas City Police Department searched far and wide for a new chief last year and finally chose from within its ranks Daryl Forte. The new chief took little time to make some major changes in the way his department combats violent crime. He assigned commanders to more street duty and more detectives to violent hotspots. This hour, we'll discuss some of those changes the chief has made since he became head of the department, the role of community policing, and we'll learn more about the man behind the badge. It's Up to Date, following this hour's news. Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. Kansas City's new police chief has wasted little time throwing his weight around. Since taking over in October, Chief Daryl Forte has assigned officers to four violent hotspots. He's reassigned top commanders and instituted a new rule. All of them will work at least one weekend shift in the field every 6 months. Detectives have been added to the gang squad. He's emphasized community policing. It's all aimed, he said, at creating a sense of urgency. His timing is good. The city recorded 114 homicides in 2011, a nearly 8% increase from the previous year. And police are investigating, as we speak, a suspected triple homicide in the 3900 block of the Paseo. The chief is here with us this morning, and this is his first visit to Up to Date. And, Chief, welcome and belated congratulations.
Well, thank you, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here.
What can you tell us about the triple homicide at 39th and the Paseo? What happened there?
Well, in summary, a person was looking for a friend and hadn't talked to that friend in a while, so she responded to that location and observed that friend outside beside a car dead. She summoned a passing by police officer, and that got everything going. They summoned some other resources. 3 or 4 hours later, a search warrant was conducted inside the residence, and two other bodies was found at that time.
Do we know what the motive was for lots of dead people here?
Not at this time.
Tough news.
Sure is. And anytime you have a homicide, but it's tripled when you have a triple because, again, family members are impacted, neighbors are afraid, and we have a lot of work to do.
You were saying that when you yourself responded to that crime scene, and when you went there, people in the neighborhood knew who Daryl Forte was.
Yes.
Yeah.
Upon exiting my car, I had people come up to me, and the one victim there, I was given his name. I was given some history about him, and the older lady that was there. They told me about her and about how nurturing she was for people, and the mechanic, the one guy that supposedly came over there to work on cars in the driveway. So, and that's before detectives even had a chance to talk to people. And that's what community policing is about. It's not having a defined definition. It's about actually having a practice. If you look at most definitions, they talk about a philosophy. But as long as I'm the chief of the Kansas City Missouri Police Department, it's going to be a practice of going out there, solving problems, working with people in the neighborhood.
And you spent a lot of time. Was it on Prospect? You've gone from Independence Avenue all the way out to 85th Street, and you know that corridor pretty well.
My entire career. I can talk to some of the businesses owners over there over the years. Some have gone, of course, and there's new businesses over there. I purchased actually two properties on Prospect in 2005 when they had a serial killer. And there was a lot of noise in the community about, you know, the city not taking care of vacant lots and those sorts of things. So I purchased two commercial lots on Prospect and one on Mungall, one on 23rd and Lawn where we had a high crime area over there, and then also on 42nd and Garfield to do my part to keep those lots clean and to give me a reason to be out in those neighborhoods on a consistent basis.
And what did you find out as you were out there every weekend?
I found out a lot, you know, and basically people like the police. They just don't know us, but once they get to know you, and I give you a quick example. At 35th and Prospect, a lot I have over there, or had over there, I sold it in December, but I put a for sale sign on it several years ago, and for some reason my signs kept coming up missing. And a guy came up to me. I think he thought somebody was going to tell me, but he was stealing my signs for somebody else that lived in the neighborhood because they didn't want me to leave. So he told me that he was getting $5 every time he removed a sign because they liked me coming over to talking to me. And again, I've done that my entire career, but that was the first time that I actually purchased property so I'd have a reason to go down there and then talk to people that wanted to help me keep the grass mowed or pick up the trash over there. So again, that just showed me that once people get to know us, they appreciate us.
You know, why haven't there's always been traditionally going back many years, you're talking to an old police reporter here yourself from, you know, 12th and Locust, this notion that so many people in Kansas City, so many African Americans don't trust the police department. The police department doesn't get the kind of cooperation from citizens it needs even to solve, you know, some of these great crimes we read about in the paper all the time. Why is that? And can you really change that kind of culture within the department, Chief?
I think part of the reason that I'm 49 years old, and I remember the riots in, I guess it was 68. I remember watching it on television. These are riots that were in Kansas City. So you take somebody my age, we still have those images in our head, in our minds, the way people were being treated then, and we still have some luggage from that. And then you look at the people older than us that even went through more than that. They were physically abused and dogs turned loose on them and water hoses sprayed on them. And when you see those images over and over, and then you have sometimes when you have a police force that really doesn't understand the culture, because again, I think the police department, we want people to act like we want them to act. And sometimes they act differently, but it's not wrong, and we don't understand that, and sometimes we overreact. And again, as long as I'm chief of the Kansas City, Missouri Police Department, we'll never blame anyone else. We have to look at what we're doing, and that's another reason I'm out there at almost every homicide scene. I require deputy chief to respond to every homicide scene so we can, I guess, rebuild those relationships, for lack of a better term. We have to show people and not just talk about we care, talk about we're going to do this and have all kind of programs and projects. We have to be about it. We have to actually practice.
And, Chief, you're going to show people how. How do you change a culture that's, you know, apparently that embedded within the department? How do you change that?
Because when they see us and some of the leaders see us, and we're not just talking about community policing, but when we demonstrate it, when we show that we care about you, when people see the chief of police at virtually every homicide scene. We've had over 30 homicides since I've been chief. I've only not responded to two, and one of those was a late death and one was a late notification for me. But when people see we really care and not just talking about it, not trying to get sound bites, not just trying to build a resume for future endeavors, when they actually see and they talk to us and they say, well, maybe they do care, and it's not going to happen overnight. It won't happen overnight. And I know we talk about the homicides, 114, and the increase from last year. But if you look at the last 42 years, the 4 decades and a couple of years, 114 has been, put it like this, we've had 114 or more 26 of those years. So it's nothing unusual. But again, and I understand why the public, you know, in an uproar, if we had 60, to me, that's too many. I know people would probably applaud and say, oh, you know, we're down to 60. But that's still too many because every one of them has a family member and friends. Yeah. And the economic impact for Kansas City and those sorts of things, it all ties in. So we have to do a better job of doing what we do. And again, I think we have to be out there so people can understand us better. And they only understand you better by being connected to you and being able to talk to you.
You know, this notion of getting your officers sort of more in touch with people sounds terrific, but my sense always has been that so many of your officers are bouncing from call to call to call and simply don't have time to sort of relax, take a breath, and talk to people who are right in front of them on the streets of Kansas City. How big of an issue is that still?
It's a huge issue, but we have to look at things differently. When you look at things differently, you see things differently. And I say that because when you're on a call, And you know you have to go to the next call, still spend a little time there trying to build a relationship with that person. Say if they were burglarized, take the burglary report and always ask, kind of like restaurants do, can I help you with anything else? Would you like anything else? Would you like some fries with that? Why can't we ask people? we can ask, you know, is there anything else I can do for you? I know I'm here for your burglary, but do you have any other issues on this block? Here's my business card, and this is how we might build those relationships. Again, we're probably not going to get a lot more police officers. And, of course, we're not going to get any more time in 24 hours. Time is our time, and the number that we have on the streets are the number that we – but we can use that time better. And while we're there, we can give them the best customer service that's available. And I think we shock some people if we handle that call. And then before we, you know, left the residence or business, say, is there anything else I can do for you? And if not now, mm-hmm. Here's my business card or here's my contact. That's how you build relationships, and that's what I've done over the years.
We're visiting with Kansas City's new police chief, Daryl Forte. You know, one other issue that has really plagued the department for so many years, Chief, and I know you know this, is the recruitment of black officers, officers of color, which can help in so many ways with the communication process you're talking about. Today, what percentage of the department is African American, and how are you aiming to improve those numbers?
It's about 10%, and it was about 10% 26 years ago when I came on.
It's not what it needs to be, is it?
Absolutely not. And the problem is not recruitment, it's retention. If you know, I've looked at these numbers over the years. We've had academy class probably within the last 5 or 6 years. We had 16 minorities. But when you check and you look at the numbers again, say 3 years later, over half were gone.
And where are they going?
Other jobs. Because again, I don't think it's
higher pay.
Not necessarily. Well, I'll just tell you this: black males, and it was a study done several years ago by the department under the previous chief's command, and it showed that black males get disciplined at almost twice the rate of white males, and discipline sometimes include termination, include termination. So we have some internal issues that we have to look at. And it's a lot of things we have to look at, but we have to look at ourselves because only a deputy chief and a chief can give discipline. So, you know, during that regime, those numbers were as a result of the command staff that was there then. Not saying anybody did anything wrong, but we have to look at those things. And we have had academy class start this morning, and we have five African-Americans in that class. And again,
out of how many?
Out of 20.
Mm-hmm.
And we always applaud when we have academy class. We take a picture and everybody's clapping and things. But let's see if we're still clapping 2 or 3 years from now and what the retention rate is, not just for the black males or black females, but for everybody in that class. You know,
Chief, if 10% of your force is African-American, what should it be in your view?
I would like it to be, you know, 30%.
Mm-hmm.
You know that because we deal primarily in these areas. When you look at where we have homicides and other violent crimes, we need people that can connect with people. And I'm not just saying African Americans can connect with people, because I know a lot of people out there that connect with other races. It's not about race, but when you talk about a city is like Kansas City, the segregated like Kansas City, the history of racism like Kansas City, we have to do better. So again, we have to set some high goals, and if we don't reach them, that's okay. But we have to set some high goals.
How do you go about recruiting more officers of color?
I think, you know, you do that by treating the officers that you have professionally and respect them. And I'm not just in the toleration. Why don't we show appreciation, you know, for people, not just tolerate people? You know, we always talk about, well, we tolerate other people. And I'm not in the tolerating people. Let's show appreciation for all our members and bring our members together when there's no trouble. Bring the community and the police together. And I just talked to somebody this morning about actually having a diversity roundtable, having it monitored from someone outside or mediated from someone outside. We need to do some things like that, and not just with the internal members of the police department. Why don't we have the diversity roundtable from the community? You know, the police sit on one side of the table, the community sits on another side of the table, and we talk about some of the issues and the perceptions.
Mm-hmm. And there are some issues and perceptions that need to be changed.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Daryl Forte is our guest. Our phone number here, 816-235-2888. Our email address is up to date at kcur.org, or go to KCUR's Facebook page or tweet us at KCUR up to date. Chief, you just mentioned last year 114 homicides, and you also pointed out that those numbers, you know, they don't seem to vary all that much from year to year. And again, as someone who's covered this department before, 114, it seems to be sort of right down the pike in terms of what it's been traditionally. It almost seems as if violence on that scale has sort of become part of the fabric of Kansas City. Do you buy that?
No, I don't, because if you look at, you know, and oftentimes we try to tie drugs and gangs into that. But if you look at 1980, we had 139 homicides in 1980.
Mm-hmm.
And no one talked about Bloods and Crips and any of those other gangs then. Crack hadn't been introduced yet to Kansas City. I think we try to justify and the dollars. Let me back up for a minute. I think with crack and gangs and the narcotics activity other than crack, there was tax dollars or federal dollars associated with that. So in the late 80s, everything became drug and gang related, when in fact it's not. You know, if you go back and look at the homicides for November, we had 17 of them. 17 homicides for November.
That's a lot.
And you look at them, most were not drug or gang related. And most of those victims and suspects were 40 or over. So again, we have that miss, and that's unusual. Don't get me wrong, that's unusual. But look at yesterday, all three victims were over 40, and the one before that earlier this year, the first homicide of the year, the gentleman was over 40. So we have to keep looking at what's going on. We can't keep blaming the young kids because it's not just the young kids out there pulling the trigger.
So the stereotypes you're saying when it comes to homicides don't always apply.
Absolutely, absolutely, mm-hmm. and again, the community made that connection. I think, and media made that connection about drug and gangs. And if you look at 1992 and 93, I think we very rarely talk about those numbers. In 1992, we had 152 homicides. In 1993, we had 153 homicides. In 2005, we had 127 homicides. So again, if you compare those numbers, Kansas City has trended down. But we don't, that's not good media to talk about, the numbers the way they were then versus now.
Mm-hmm. You've created, in response to all this, Chief, you've created this new concept of hotspots around town, and you're concentrating officers into these hotspots as a way to begin to curtail violent crime. What's the concept behind the hotspot, and tell us how they work?
Hotspot policing is basically area saturation. We want to
put officers where the problems are.
Absolutely. When I analyze this, the data from years ago, and again, I've been on 26 years.
Got to clear it. Yeah,
I could tell you that were the areas where we had problems, and it hasn't shifted a whole lot. And there's four hot spots that I identified, and if you add those four areas together, it's about a little less than 13 square miles. Where over 50% of your homicides involving a firearm occurred, and over 42% of your aggravated assaults occurred in these less 13 square mile area. So we put officers there, and it wasn't just to reduce crime by putting people in jail and identifying suspects. It's to build relationships.
So put people on the street, get them talking to people, find out what's going on in the community.
Absolutely. That's mm-hmm. part of it. Not just putting people in jail, but building relationships in those hotspots, because that's where, we have a majority of our crimes, those crimes that I mentioned.
Can you say where around town these hotspots are?
No, I never talked about those, simply because the criminals don't tell us where they're going to strike. So we're trying to do things differently and not tell them where we might set up.
What kind of impact are these hotspots having? Can you tell yet, or is it way too early?
One significant impact, we have people talking to us now. Just like I told you about the homicide scene yesterday, the triple scene, where people were talking, and you had a lot of people out on the street, and it's just that, just that community coming together saying, hey, we can't tolerate these things. And again, it's not just me. It's not a one-man journey. We have Jackson County Sheriff's working with us, Jackson County Sheriff Mike Sharp. We have a Jean Peters Baker. She has some resources there. I talk to the mayor on a regular basis and city manager Schulte. We talk about these things, and the city has agreed when we identify houses in these hotspots where there's criminal activity going on inside these houses, they'll demolish the houses for us. So we're working on this thing with a lot of people, and we're going to make it a little bigger, I imagine, in the next week or two.
So if people are expecting miracles, your word of caution would be what then?
I'm not a miracle worker.
Okay, it's going to take time.
Yeah, we're going to focus on these things, and this plan is not static. It's constantly changing.
Let's go to some phone calls here at 816-235-2888. We have a full board of calls for Chief Daryl Forte. Let's go to Richard from Overland Park. Richard, good morning.
Thank you for taking my call, and I really appreciate the work you do, Chief. I know that's not an easy task, and question that I had is, you had mentioned that only a small portion of the homicides are drug and gang related. Half, a quarter, a third? What do you think is a fair number? And then I have a follow up if I could.
I would say less than a third.
Okay, and the follow up question would be: would gun control be helpful in reducing the amount of homicides, or would there be homicides by other means in place of those homicides? And I'll take your comments off the air. I don't like guns, and I wonder if eliminating guns helps you as well. Great show, thank you.
Thank you, Richard. And the department has tried over the years to get more guns off the streets. What about gun control, Chief?
Yeah, gun control is a big issue, but it's going to take legislation to do that. Several years ago, occupants and operators of vehicles can have a weapon in the car now. The law has changed, and that would certainly be something that would help, because if someone became angry, they wouldn't have a weapon readily accessible. So that would help. But again, we have to remember the Constitution and the right to bear arms and those sorts of things. And oftentimes, those guns that are being used haven't been obtained legally. So mm-hmm. we'd still have an issue, and that would be a huge issue.
But one of your concerns is that if you could wave your magic wand, you would change legislation and you would focus on getting guns away from people.
If I could wave a magic wand, I would actually wave it so people could have some conflict resolution skills so they could have any weapon they wanted, but they wouldn't use it inappropriately.
You talk about that one of the big issues, and you've said this publicly, one of the big issues you're facing is the inability of so many people to resolve conflict. And I'm wondering, as a chief of police, how can the police department deal with a social issue that's like that?
We can't alone, but what we can do is demonstrate that if you don't practice acceptable conflict resolution skills, we'll be there. You know, and we have to set the tone saying this is not accepted in Kansas City. We can't, you know, we can't be at every dinner table. We can't do those things. But what we need to do, once you fail to, I guess, mind your manners and you elect to go hurt somebody or kill someone, we're going to be there to address that to put you in the court system.
But clearly that sort of issue, that lack of ability to resolve conflict has been part of the problem in this town for decades, and it doesn't seem to be getting any better or any worse. It's just there.
That's true, and it's demonstrated if you look at the homicides for last year out of the 114, the ones that we know the motive, 15 were domestic violence related.
15
of them were domestic violence related.
Mm-hmm.
So we're looking at ways to possibly identify violent offenders and domestic violence, those that are, I guess, injure those with serious injuries, those that are being released from the penitentiary for violent crimes like that. We've assigned a sergeant to the Crime Commission, their second chance program, that they'll begin heal, and we'll add some more people later. They'll begin to monitor high-risk offenders that come out of jail. We'll knock on the door along with probation and parole, and we'll talk to them and say, we're here to help you if you want to do right. We'll help you and guide you in the right resources to social services. And if you don't, we're going to try to put you back in jail. We're going to be high touch. We want people to know. We want you to come back out. We want you to be successful. But if you don't adhere to what you need to adhere to, the laws and the rules that were set up by your mm-hmm. Parole officer, we're going to put you back in jail.
Do you need more police officers, Chief?
No. You know, given the state of the economy, I wouldn't ask for police officers now because there's a lot of other entities in the city that need resources. I just want to deploy ours in a better way and be a little more effective with what we have. Now,
in a perfect world, you'd have more?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
How many more? How many do you need?
I'd say, you know, if you just want me to throw out a number, I'd say 2,500.
And you have how many now?
About 1,400.
So you need almost doubling.
Yeah. If I could wave a magic wand and say, okay, what do you need? I'd give everybody a take-home car. I would hope that we could have some kind of incentive to have police officers move in the high crime areas, you know, give them some incentive on housing and those sorts of things. And all those things matter. But if we can't do that piece, we have to do the best we can with what we have. And I think we can't get any better than being out there, being high touch with the residents and letting them know that we care.
You know, is there a recognition among the leaders of this city? I mean, Kansas City is what, the fifth or sixth or something like that. When it comes to square miles, Kansas City is one of the biggest cities in the country. And that simply means that your officers are more dispersed over a wide area than other cities are. There's not much concentration. How big of an issue is that for you?
It's a huge issue,
yeah.
But it's something that we can't
do much about.
Yeah, can't do much about right now. We just have to do the best we can with what we have. And again, we can't do it by ourselves. The community has to be a part of this.
Okay. We received this email too here, Chief. There's a hearing today in the Missouri Senate about a bill that would call on local law enforcement to check the immigration status on stops when they suspect it might be an illegal immigrant. What do you think about the local police's role in immigration enforcement, and what would be a reasonable suspicion that someone is an illegal immigrant?
I'm opposed to stopping anyone just to check immigration status.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have any proof on me to show that, you know, I'm here legally. So, again, I think that's – but rest assured, whatever the law is, we'll have to enforce it. And we have someone down there talking at the General Assembly today. We sent someone down
saying
there
you oppose
express,
this thing.
I oppose us having to stop anyone to check immigration status.
Okay. Let's go back to some phone calls here. Let's go to Russ from Kansas City, Missouri. Russ, good morning.
Hey there. A couple of things. One, I really sincerely hope you get a magic wand. But aside from that – it's been a riff of mine for years that tolerance is not enough because it implies there's something to tolerate. So talking about embrace and appreciation rather than just putting up with, that's a good thing, sir, and I really appreciate that. But I had a question, however. Have we really seen a drop in violent crime, or has modern medicine, trauma centers and such, simply relegated more murders to attempted murder status? In other words, fewer successful homicides. And I will take my answer via the radio. Thank you.
Yeah, that's a good question, Russ. What do you think, Chief?
That is excellent, and I've had that discussion before. If you look at the numbers for last year, we had over 1,000 aggravated assaults involving a firearm with over 500 injuries. So, again, had it not been for modern medicine, our numbers could have been way up. And I talk about that over and over.
And it's an issue.
Right? It's certainly an issue. And, again, our numbers could be way up there if it wasn't for modern medicine.
Okay. Back to some phone calls. Phil from Excelsior Springs. Phil, good morning.
Good morning. I believe that we in the community have a role in supporting and appreciating and whatnot individual officers. Some years back, I had to make a mail run at the office in which I was working, and that involved driving a two-lane, no-shoulders road with hills. The morning I made this particular mail run, there was some utility work being done, and the local department had stationed an officer at each end of the road, and they used their radios to control traffic. When I returned from my run, I called the local police department, and I expressed my appreciation to the supervisor for making what could have been an incredibly dangerous run totally routine. And the poor guy just about fell off his chair. The idea that somebody called to compliment him and his department for doing routine, what was to him routine traffic control, was a totally new experience. But to me as a driver, this was a big thing, and I thought it appropriate to tell him and to tell his officers how much I appreciated it.
How often do you get complimented, Chief?
We get quite a bit. We probably need more, because oftentimes, if you realize the nature of our work, we're not summoned when things are going well for people in most cases. So officers as well as command staff would appreciate any time someone wants to recognize an officer, because that is huge. We have a great, great staff. They go above and beyond the call of duty on a regular basis, but oftentimes you don't hear about those things.
Phil, thank you.
You're welcome, sir.
Let's go to Jim from Lee Summit. Jim, welcome to Up to Date. You're on with Police Chief Daryl Forte.
Yes, that email somewhat answered the question, and it, I'd like to have an address for his consideration from a person who has been to Mexico, and, of course, 75% of the illegals that are here are from Mexico. And the Mexican population, I think, is some descent, 90% Mexican. But, you know, there's a lot of talk now. If you pass laws where, you know, you check for illegal immigration, that the Hispanics will be afraid to talk with you and they won't rat on people. Well, I'm telling you, and if I know their culture, and I have worked with hundreds of them side by side with them, and I'm telling you, it doesn't matter how nice you treat them or how much benefits you give them or how, no matter what you do, Mexicans are not going to rat on their fellow Mexicans. And that, I would just like you to consider that, because it's an absolute fact, and I haven't seen us changed in 60 years.
Well, Jim, is that a stereotypical view, Chief, or do you buy what Jim is saying, or is he off base?
No, I think he's a little off base. I understand where he's coming from, but we have people from all places that are willing to step up and help. This is nothing new. We have people that come from all countries, whether they, you know, are legal or illegal. We have people on a regular basis that step up. So, what, you know, I can't just throw that out there and accept that as a blanket statement.
Yeah. Okay. Let me go to Chris here from Kansas City, Missouri. Chris, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. And I want to congratulate you on your approach. It's an action and responsible-oriented approach that has not been prevalent here in Kansas City, Missouri. We have a business at 33rd and Troost, and over the last 10 years, we lost approximately $250,000 worth of inventory. We caught the perpetrators. We found where they were fencing the stuff. The perpetrators admitted to the detectives, the property detectives, they in fact had stolen it. And the detective said, well, we'll work to get all your stuff back, then we can decide how to proceed with prosecution afterwards. And then they did nothing, absolutely nothing. And then Last year, we had someone drive up to our property, steal about $10,000 worth of structural steel, which was part of the business we're trying to build to provide jobs there in the Center City area. Caught them red-handed, blocked them from coming out. And the question I was told by the police when I showed up is, I only had 4 no trespassing signs instead of 6 to a dozen, and they simply let them go. And this individual was a known drug trafficker and a known violent person in the neighborhood who now steals from all the surrounding businesses with impunity. So in terms of property crime, it's actually been worse for us to have an expectation of protection from the police than if we had no police at all, because now I have razor wire and I have DVD cameras and I have patrols. And that whole thing set us back 5 years in providing potentially hundreds of jobs to the Center City area. And so the police department itself has been one of our biggest problems because we had an expectation that was not there. So I appreciate your actions, and I hope it's more than just to deal with homicide and drugs, because property crimes feed the drug problem, feed the violence problem, and feed the unemployment problem and the cycle of poverty within the area that we're trying to establish what used to be a Fortune 500 company again. So I'll take my comments off there, but I really appreciate your approach, and I hope you get very aggressive with it. And if you have a chance to shake up your property division with your detectives, who, frankly, are useless to us, I'd really appreciate it.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Chris, thank you. Let's have the chief respond to the concern over property crimes here.
And I just want you to know, sir, we're focusing on homicides, but we haven't eliminated or ignored any other area. We're still doing some things. We have property crime squads out there. We're following people. The drug squad that we just added a sergeant and 6 detectives to, they pay attention to property crimes. I can't say too much on the air, but again, your point is well taken, and I don't want anybody to think we're ignoring any other area on the police department, whether it be traffic, whether it be property crimes, whether it be any other nonviolent crimes. That's just an area that we need to focus on, because we can't be all over the place, and that's where I wanted to put our resources and focus on these things. But again, we haven't ignored any other area.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our very good conversation here with Kansas City, Missouri Police Chief Daryl Forte. We'll talk about his own background and other plans he has for the department. And we'll take your phone calls, too, at 816-235-2888. Our email address, UpToDate@KCUR.org. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. And welcome back to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. If you missed our conversation about the history and lasting legacy of the Pullman Porter, you'll find it in all of our previous broadcasts at kcur.org. Tonight at 7, Missouri Governor Jay Nixon delivers his State of the State address. You can catch that address and the Republican response tonight on KCUR. Tomorrow on this program, we'll examine an address and talk with a reporter and lawmakers about issues facing the Missouri legislature. This hour, we're visiting with Kansas City, Missouri Police Chief Daryl Forte. This is his first visit to Up to Date. Chief, when you were a deputy police chief in Kansas City before you took this job, twice a month you used to board a city bus just to listen to what other riders were saying along the routes there. What did you pick up during those rides?
Sometimes nothing, but other times, you know, when you listen to people talking, if they talked about the police or crime in town or something, and I tried to time it around when something had happened in town where, you know, you could get a little, I guess, I don't want to say dialogue, because I didn't dialogue with people. I just sat there and just kind of observed and took notes and things.
Did you wear your uniform?
No, never. I'd never do that on the bus like that, because I didn't want to draw attention and people not be able to say what they wanted to say. And just learned we have some issues in Kansas City. There's some trust issues. There's some issues in certain parts of town where people feel like the police really not concerned about black-on-black crime and those sorts of things. And not just the bus rides, but I've been doing surveys for years. Kansas City Star, I believe, in 98, 99, followed me and took a picture of me doing a survey at a bus stop on Troost back then. And I continue to do that. I don't know if I have a survey in this car because I just switched cars, but I kept them with me all the time. And I just stopped and talked to people, the perception of the police, ask them if they knew any police officers and those sorts of things.
Mm-hmm. So you're still going to keep doing it.
Exactly. And if you look at my strategic plan, you know, there's 9 strategic objectives and over 221 priority actions. It's broken down in there. And that's from the community, the internal community and the external community. And you look at the piece where we have a deputy chief respond to every homicide scene. I heard commissioner, Commissioner Watson Hunt, say that 2 or 3 years ago about why don't we treat a homicide scene like a critical incident? And I went back and put that in my notes. And that's where I got that one. And I could probably name each one off where I got it from people. Because, again, it's a community policing plan. One community, one vision is the title.
You knew very early on that you wanted to be a cop. How come?
I grew up helping people. I remember back in the sixth grade, a guy was getting evicted from an apartment, and I didn't really understand what evicted mean, but I knew they said he'd be leaving. A real nice guy. He'd been to the military, and every time a helicopter would fly low over the neighborhood, he'd hit the ground. And I know he was getting evicted. And again, I just thought they said he was going to have to move because he didn't have money. I remember knocking on doors trying to take a collection for him.
Mm-hmm.
And that same year when I was in the sixth grade, I talked to a police officer at 76 in Monroe, and he told me a lot of things. And I mean, we just never know who we're going to influence. I don't know his name. I wasn't thinking about that. But he said, if you never smoke and you never drink, you can be a police officer. I'm 49 now. I've never smoked or drank any alcohol or experimented with any drugs, because not just because of him, but because of my strict mother. Mm-hmm. And I never was a follower with people. So, again, we never know who we touch. And again, I wish I would have known the officer's name so I could call him up now and thank him. But there's a lot of people responsible for my success, whether it be the field training officer I had, other deputy chiefs. I know I'm the first black chief of police. But there's a lot of blacks before me that set this tone. You know, Julia Bush, who's Julia Price now, Al Lomax, who's the U.S. Marshal. I could go on and on. Robert Wesley, Ron Smith. There was a lot of people before me that set this up for me. And not just blacks. It was some whites that helped set it up for me. All the chiefs that I work for, whether it be Corwin, Easley. I mean, I could go on and on and name the people that got me here.
How significant is it that you're the first black chief of police in Kansas City?
I really don't think about it. I want to be known as the most effective chief. I want to be known as the best chief. I want to be known as the chief that bridged that gap with other segments of the community. You know, I'm glad I'm black. I'm glad I'm the chief of police, but that's not what I'm focusing on. I want to be the chief for the entire city. I made that known. One of the first places I visited was Northland Neighborhoods, Northland Chamber, because I want everybody to know I'm the chief for the entire city, because I know that it could get lost. I'm black and we have a lot of black crime, so I'm going to focus, kind of like people thinking we're just going to focus on homicides. We are going to focus on homicides, but we're not, you know, minimizing our efforts in any other areas to do that.
What was it, though, about police chief that was such a draw for you even as a young kid? I mean, what is it about police work that has your name written all over it?
Because I can make a difference and I care. You know, I live and breathe this. God had a plan for me. My pastor, Pastor Lindsay at Concord, I remember talking to him when they made the process known, and he said, just remember, if it's meant for you, you'll have it. I had no anxiety going through the process. I slept like a baby.
For being chief you're talking about?
Yeah, going through the process to become chief. When mm-hmm. I talked to him, there's just so many people out there that just I saw at the store, and you know, when I got in the process, just encouraged me. And early on in my career, like we talked about before, there's people that just took me by the hand and said, Daryl, you probably don't want to say this. You need to go back and get your education. You know, you might think about getting a master's now because you don't need it now, but you need to go back to school. I listen. And that's one thing about me. I think I listen to all people. I don't have it figured out, and I've said this over and over, and I'll say it throughout my tenure. This is not a one-man journey. It's going to take all of us to make this thing better.
You know, early on, some people thought you were just too nice for police work. In fact, one sergeant told you to consider social work. Was there a time when you were too nice for police work?
Never thought I was too nice. I always thought I was at the right place at the right time. And I never changed, you know, and I learned this as a kid. You know, my mom took us out of the school district when the end of my sixth grade year, and I went to a predominantly white school district. Heard every comment, heard all these things. And I remember coming home and she's telling me things in the seventh grade, eighth grade, ninth grade, all the way through my senior year. Daryl, you're not a victim. Things happen to everybody. How are you going to deal with it? And you know what? I thank God for being taken out of the environment that I was comfortable in, thrown into another environment where, in some cases, I was the only black in some of my classes. And that gave me a broader perspective on things. And even before that, when I was in the Kansas City School District, I was the type, if someone looked like they were the outcast or a new person at the school, I was the one that would go over there. I've never tried to assimilate with anybody. I don't care about being like anybody else. I'm an accentuate. I'm a be who I am. Nobody can beat me at being me. I'm going to keep being me. Some people may not understand, but I pray before I make major decisions. I pray before I leave home. I know my wife's going to be there when this job is over, whether it's 10 more months or 10 more years. I got to be me, and I got to do what's right for the city, not for me. I don't need an updated resume, because when I leave here, I plan to do some other things for me and not go work for somebody else. So I'm not trying to build a resume. I'm trying to build a better city for everybody.
Your mom sounds like a pistol.
She's great. They call her the warden.
The warden?
Yeah. Growing up, people in the neighborhood called her the warden because she was strict. She raised five of us by herself, and that's why a lot of us are headstrong. The kids, we believe what we believe, and I fear no man. I fear God, and that's the only person I fear. I'm retirement eligible, so if they would ask me to leave tomorrow, I'll still be okay. But I got to do what God intends for me to do at this time in my life.
She's still around.
She sure is.
She must be a proud mom.
She sure is. She's been proud of us since we were little kids, since I knew what proud was. No matter what we were doing, she's been there to support us. And she stressed, be who you are and don't worry about what everybody else thinks or they're going to bounce you around like a ping pong ball.
You've pulled a lot of different assignments in the Kansas City Police Department. What have you done? Walk us through the different assignments you've had.
Of course, patrol. I've been an undercover narcotics detective.
Wow.
I've worked, it's been so long, employment. You know, the hiring process. I worked homicide as a sergeant on the night shift for almost 3 years. I went back as a captain mm-hmm. for 2 years. I was promoted to major and went back as the violent crimes division commander over all of violent crimes. I was commander of narcotics and vice. I don't know how to look at my resume.
What's the stickiest situation you've ever been in?
I think... You know, when I look back on it, when I was a patrol officer, I chased a guy down the alley, and he tried to take my gun from me, and he was bigger than me.
Oh.
And that's probably the thing that comes back to me.
How did that resolve?
He didn't get my gun.
Here you are today.
And I was nice to him. Mm-hmm.
Daryl Forte is our guest. He's Kansas City, still new police chief. Our phone number here, 816-235-2888. Our email address, up to date. @kcur.org. John from Kansas City, Missouri, welcome.
Yes, thank you. I live on the east side, and in the last year or the last 2 years, I've been broken into about 4 times. About 2 years ago, they stole all the copper out of the basement of my house. And when I got the insurance company to come in, they said, oh, this is happening all over town, all over this part of the town, that they're stealing the copper out of the house. Well, it seems to me that there's only 2 or 3 places you can fence that. So why can't they get control of it?
You know, there's no serial number on copper, you know, when they do that. And I understand I've had it happen to me years ago before it was at the level it is now.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think there's legislation where, you know, people need ID in order to cash those or recycle those items in. And again, if you know, you can't trace it to anything. If someone has a valid ID and they take it to a recycler, you can't just tell them, you know, we don't want to take your copper because they're in business to make money.
Yeah.
And it's an issue all around the country. It's not just germane to Kansas City, but it's an issue all over the country.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's where community policing comes in. If someone's doing something that's unlawful, we need someone to call so we can catch them in the act, those sorts mm-hmm. of things. Not after, you know, we need not keep, recommending legislation. Let's get the community together so when somebody's backed up to a house and that vehicle is not known to be there, we need people to reach out. And I understand sometimes why they don't, because they may think the police and others are not responsive. So, again, I'm not blaming anyone. We have to do a better job of developing relationships, kind of like the triple homicide where people heard the arguing and they heard the shots. But we didn't get a single call. I don't blame the residents. We have to do a better job of reaching out to the community saying we care, so call us to give us that opportunity.
Right. Well, see, I've had EDT, and a couple times they've called me and told me the house was being broken into. They said, call the cops. And it seems like they never get there in time to catch anybody.
Well, I without knowing the specifics on that,
well,
I can't.
I realize that, but it's just like, why are they so slow?
Response times have been an issue for a long time, too, Chief.
Absolutely. You know, when you talk about covering an area like this and you talk about violent crimes and that are in progress, that's going to have priority over somebody, possibly stealing pipes or something like that. So we just have to prioritize. Yesterday when I was at a scene, a young lady told me when someone was stealing pipes from the house that was, I guess, burned beyond repair probably, that she actually opened her door and said, "What are you doing?" And they drove off. I'm not saying everyone mm-hmm. needs to do that, but sometimes, you know, the police can't be everywhere all the time. It's going to take other people to help this work.
Let's go to Mary from Kansas City, Missouri. Mary, you're on with Chief Daryl Forte. Good morning.
Well, good morning, and thank you for taking my call. Congratulations, Chief Forte. I am so proud that you are our chief. My husband retired from KCPD as a sergeant, and he was the first walking patrol years ago, and he was in that explosion. Do you remember that?
No, I don't.
You don't?
No.
Oh, you're very young then. Well, he was in an explosion, and two of them, he and his partner, after they got out of the hospital, they went back where they were at the walking patrol. They're at down there on the east side. Every child, every parent went over, and they brought them food. I mean, the kids would walk with them. It was a beautiful thing.
Well, maybe the question is the importance of walking patrols, and you've had some concerns about that, whether the department can afford those walking patrols going forward or not, Chief.
I think that's huge, and that's something I'd like to do, but there's some other things that we have to do before that, and I've talked about it before publicly. I'd like to start in the Northeast area. You know, we have some issues over there. We have some language barriers over there, and I think if we can identify two officers that are with great interpersonal skills, that would be the first place to start. But when you talk about foot patrol, and I know we, you know, before
you passed them along Armor Boulevard too, I think, right?
Exactly. We, mm-hmm. you know, we did a test project, and it was known in the beginning we wouldn't be able to sustain it. Something I would like to do. But when you do some things like that, and one part of the community gets it, and another part doesn't, and we talk about slow response times, as the chief of police, I have to look out for the entire city. I know that, you know, it gets us good press and those sorts of things, and it's something I want to do.
Yeah.
And when we have the adequate resources and we address some of the things we need to address before we do that.
You know, one of the big issues in Jefferson City this year, we were talking about that a few minutes ago, was this whole issue of local control of the police department. As most folks know, the department here and in St. Louis is controlled by the state with a board appointed by the governor. Where do you stand on that issue?
Does
it make any difference to you or not?
It makes a difference. We are locally controlled because all our board members reside
right.
in Kansas City.
That's
they
right.
pay taxes in Kansas City. And I'm biased in this part. You know, at this point, I have no interest in changing our board because this is the board that hired me. This is the board that said they have confidence in me. So, you know, at least today, I feel like this is the structure that we need to be under right now.
So you don't want to change it?
Well, I'm not saying I don't want to change it, but I don't know what that change would be. I mean, would it still be if I worked under the mayor, that would be fine if I worked under the city manager. But would I work for the entire council where I had 12 people telling me what to do and those sorts of things? I can't endorse something when I really don't understand or know what that end product would be for a structure.
Let's go back to some phone calls here. Teresa from Kansas City, Missouri. Good morning.
Good morning. I just wanted to thank Chief Forte for reiterating the fact that I've been listening to this on the internet, so I'm kind of lagging behind. But at any rate, it is our moral responsibility as the citizens of this community to stand up and be the front runners for letting people know that we're not going to stand for this. The police can't do it all by themselves. In this case, they're not the ones committing the crimes. If we want this to stop in our communities, we have to stand up. It's just that simple. I am a victim of one of my family members was one of the victims that was in that triple homicide.
Of course,
I'm very angered. Yes, the family is very upset. And it's just a continuum that people hear these things going on. And, I mean, it just, you know, gunshots and things have become so prevalent in our neighborhoods that we hear them and people think, oh, they're just shooting again. Well, In most of those cases, yeah, they're just shooting, but somebody's getting shot. And we need to, you know, if we have to flood the phone lines, then that's what the hell we need to do. So I just wanted to say that it is our moral responsibility as people who live in these communities to stand up.
Chief, yeah.
Thank you.
I'm sorry for your loss, too, Teresa.
That's all right. That's okay. All right. We will work through it. So
yeah.
We have to work together. That's what this is about.
Okay. All the best to you.
Thanks.
Well, Chief, thanks so much for coming in today. Sure enjoyed having you, and it sounds like your plate is a very full one. We wish you the best.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Come back and visit us here on Up to Date, too. Stay in touch.
I'll certainly do that.
That's Kansas City, Missouri's new police chief here with us today, Daryl Forte. Join us tonight at 7 for Missouri Governor Jay Nixon. He'll deliver his State of the State message. You can catch the address and the Republican response tonight on KCUR. Tomorrow on this program, we'll examine the address and talk with a reporter and lawmakers about issues facing the Missouri legislature. Don't forget to follow this program on Twitter. Just look for KCUR Up to Date. Our show is produced by Steven Steigman with help from Danny Alexander, Kim Noble, and Brian Ellison. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you are up to date.